Der Geruch in una berushutet adokusho nigin yaharit in una ijavit kiman norpat biyarar kuchi garin nekanak nengiya Inuin
Hello and welcome to Ocean Research Project. I am Matt Rutherford, Executive Director of Ocean Research Project, sailor guy and general podcasty individual. Man of many titles. I am in Warren, Ohio, the great metropolitan freaking bustling city of Warren, Ohio. Warren, Ohio is where I was born. I was born in Warren. Thank God my family left when I was young. This is one of the saddest armpits of the United States. I mean, talk about the Rust Belt. Basically, Warren, like a lot of other towns in this area, used to be really bustling and used to have lots of steel mills. There's a lot of manufacturing. And then the manufacturing in the 90s, it got outsourced, got moved overseas, and now basically nobody has any jobs. It's not the most educated place on the planet, and there's no work. And it's like cloudy all the time, and the weather sucks a lot. And yeah, you can get a house here for $16,000 with like a front porch, like an upstairs, downstairs, 1,600 square feet house, for 16 grand. Last year, or maybe it was a couple of years ago, me and my friend went and looked at a house for sale that was for $1,000. It was like a two-story house. Now, I mean, it looked bad. I mean, someone had stripped it, like completely stripped it. But it was still like, it was still a house. I mean, it was $1,000. I mean, that's like the price of a chart plotter. You can get a whole house. But yeah, okay, move to Warren. Buy a house for 16 grand. You're not going to find a job unless you want to work at a gas station, you know, or a liquor store or something like that. Work at the pawn shop, you know. So anyways, I'm in my friend Brian's house. Brian's at work. This house smells like a giant ashtray. He's a bachelor. He's like in his mid-30s, and he's been a bachelor way too long. I love the guy. I've known him for like 19, 20 years. But, He smokes these cigarettes called Timeless Time. You know, what a horrible name for a cigarette. Timeless Time? I mean, considering it's taking time away from you, like, where's the timeless part? Like, I don't understand it. And, you know, when I was, like, a teenager, I thought I was, like, being all cool. I used to, like, you know, I smoked for, like, 7 years or something. And I used to go up and be like, hey, man, you know, like if I was bumming a cigarette, you know, I'd be like, hey, man, can you help me take a little time off my life sentence? You know, because of course, every cigarette you smoke, you're going to live a little less. You know, I thought I was being funny or cool or something. Timeless Time, man. What a horrible name for a cigarette. So anyways, sitting here in Warren, Ohio, I just got here like, my phone keeps ringing. Damn it. I'm not going to answer it. I've already restarted this podcast because somebody else called me just a minute ago. I have to have my phone on because it has the timer, so I know how long I've been talking for, so I don't talk too long on this podcast because it's segmented. Anyways, I'm sitting here, drove all day. I was in Maine before. I meant to do this podcast like 5 days ago. So since last time I talked, I was on the hard. And I was doing all sorts of work on my boat, trying to make my boat more livable, try to make it, you know, look better outside, knock the smell out, rip all the head hoses out, rip the head out, put a new holding tank in it, you know, just make it nice. And, you know, I got all the smell, the last couple of years in the Arctic were sort of hard on the boat, got all the smell out of it, made it nice. And then I left went down to Florida. I thought that Valiant 42 was going to be my last delivery of the season. It wasn't. I ended up having another delivery come up. And so, you know, and it was on an outbound 46. So I had to take an outbound 46, almost exactly identical from the last delivery. I had to leave out of West Palm Beach by Peanut Island. There's an inlet there, same inlet both times. Going to the same marina in Annapolis, Port Annapolis Marina. Outbound 46 is probably one of the most underappreciated serious blue water sailboats out there. Not many people know about outbounds. They're really, really well-built boats. They sail incredibly well. They're expensive. Like, a new one would cost you like $750,000. This one was a listing. We were bringing it up to the broker. I was bringing it up to the brokerage up in Annapolis. And this one was probably $400,000. I think that will knock the price down a little more. Man, can you believe? I get down there to look at this boat. And you know, this some other broker in Florida has been listed this boat for the last year. And I go down to get on this boat, and there's like dirt on the floors. This guy let his little Jack Russell, his little dog, run all over the inside of this boat. And there is like dog hair plastered to all the cushions, the rugs. There's like white dog hair everywhere. It's like, you got to be kidding me. Like, you know what? I would kill to have a $400,000 listing. And this is how you're treating it? You're letting your dog run around? You're letting dirt? I mean, the floor and the head was like black from dirt. It's amazing. It blows my mind how bad some yacht brokers treat their listings. You know, you get a beautiful listing like this, you better treat that listing better than you treat your own boat. And let your dog run around. You didn't smell like dog. You know, like you sit on the cushion and it smells like a stinky dog. It's like, no wonder nobody bought this boat from you. They freaking dog hair everywhere. Nobody wants to see that. $400,000 boat. You wouldn't buy a $400,000 boat if it was covered. I mean, granted, you can clean the dog hair up pretty easily. I mean, right? That really doesn't matter much, ultimately. But it's not what you want to see. So anyways, I get on this boat. I had my crew was a guy who brought the boat with me back from the Arctic last year. He got on an Assyat, Mike Fellner. So I'd sailed like 6 weeks with him last year on the slow boat, on the Alt. God, that was a slow ride back. Luckily, this boat's a lot faster. So this an outbound 46 is a traditional boat in the sense that it has an aft cockpit, where nowadays everybody wants the center cockpit because you get the big stateroom in the back, you know, the big bed and the big aft cabin. This is a more traditional boat in the sense it has the aft cockpit. It is sort of like the modern version of a Valiant 42. Not that it's a double ender. I mean, it's not anything like a Valiant 42 in that sense. It's a Valiant 42 in the sense that it's a boat that's ideal for a couple, you know, husband, wife. There's another cabin. Ugh, sorry. There's another cabin on the boat, so you could have your kids or something with you. But it's, you know, for being shorthanded, if you want to rip them, we made it from West Palm to the Chesapeake into the bay in less than 4 days. And we had, like, headwinds the whole time. This boat went into the headwind. I swear, in 20, 25 knots, it never pounded once. I mean, this thing was just, you know, you might meet somebody in your life, or maybe you already have. They'll be like, yeah, man, my boat sails. It's like a downhill sled, man. I sail downwind. Oh, man, you should just look out when I go downwind. Ooh, now, are you kidding me? You going to brag about going downwind? I mean, I can sail downwind with a bathtub, a broomstick, and a bedsheet, you know? That doesn't measure a boat. What measures a boat is its ability to go into the wind. You know, that's the measurement of good boat design, of a good sailboat. This boat went into the wind like a dream. I couldn't believe how well this boat was going. Because, like I've said 100 times before, or at least a few times, and I'll say another million times after, sailboats, it's all about compromise. You know, buying a sailboat is all about compromise. What is it that are your most important aspects? What is it that you want the most? You want comfort? If you want comfort and you have the money, I can help you get all sorts of Tiana 48, beautiful boat, Hylas 46, beautiful boat. Obviously, those are both rather expensive. Macintosh 47. I bet you never even heard of a Macintosh 47, have you? Beautiful center cockpit boat, giant aft cabin, tons of space inside. You know, and you know, if you want something, this boat doesn't have nearly the same amount of room inside of it. But you know, they didn't design it for that purpose. They didn't build an outbound 46 as much to be a floating condo. They built an outbound 46 so it would have like maximum sailing ability, you know, so the thing sailed properly. That's what the whole point of that boat is. So anyways, I delivered this boat up. So before I left on this, I was in a boatyard and I'm working on this boat, my boat. You know, it's on the hard, it's 100 degrees, I'm painting and doing all this other stupid stuff. And I get this call and Bernie comes up. Bernie's been running Rogue Wave for 20 years. And he's like, man, we got to get this boat up like right now. And I'm like, what do you mean we got to get it right now? And he's like, we got to get this outbound 46. His insurance is going to get screwed up. He's got to get it north of the Florida-Georgia border before July 1st or his insurance like goes void. You know, and so he's like freaking out and we got to get this boat up. Or at least Bernie was. Probably the owner probably wasn't freaking out at all. But anyways, there's a lot of pressure. So I left the day my boat was supposed to go in the water. But I wasn't there when my boat went in the water. So I did everything I could, you know, whatever, whatever. And my boat hasn't leaked in 5 years. I've done 20,000 miles on that boat. It doesn't leak, right? So whatever. So I'm coming up the ocean, the Atlantic. I get into the Chesapeake Bay. My phone starts working because your cell phone doesn't work in the ocean. I get close to Virginia Beach, coming up into the mouth of the bay, and boom, my phone's working. I'm getting a reception. I'm looking at these emails, looking at Facebook like an idiot. And anyways, I'm going through my emails and I see some guy's like, "Hey man, your boat's been beeping for a couple days." I'm like, "Oh, that's no good." So I send my friend Simon Edwards over to my boat. You know, Simon has saved me more times than I can remember. You know, I got to bring Simon on this show one day. You know, I don't even know if I could get him to do it. I'd probably have to get him drunk. And then you don't want to hear it because Simon's a bit of a mess when he's drunk. But I don't know if I could actually get, I can't take a picture of him. Like, he won't let me take a picture. Like, period. Like, he gets all mad about it. Like, yeah, he's a freaking 65-year-old English curmudgeon. Like, the definition of curmudgeon. He's also my freaking brother. But anyways, I call my man Simon, he's been doing deliveries longer I've been alive. He sailed like 400,000 miles. He saved my trip around the Americas with that water maker, which is another story for another time. You can watch Red Dot in the Ocean, which is that film they made about my trip. You can find it on Amazon Prime for free. If you got Amazon Prime, you can watch it. Simon is in the film for a couple seconds. You can see Simon. But anyways, I call up Simon, and I'm like, "Hey, man, you know, I got this weird email from this other guy saying that my boat has been beeping. You know, it's probably not much. You know, it's probably not much to worry about. But, you know, can you go check that out for me?" So you know, Simon's like, yeah, okay, you know. And like I said, Simon just bought his old boat back. Talk about a side story real quick. But Simon just bought his own boat back, this boat Brumby. Simon hates every boat. I never met anybody in my life who has sailed this many miles. I don't know if I've, in my life, I mean, like 400,000 miles is a lot of miles. I mean, and that's like an understatement of the day. And I've only met a couple of people that have sailed more than 400,000 miles. I've never met anybody that hates so many sailboats. I mean, he hates every boat, basically. He has almost nothing nice to say about, except Brumby. This South African-built sailboat he had years and years and years ago. That all you ever hear is, "Oh, Brumby this, Brumby that," and a Beneteau 50. Now, I'm talking like the 1990s Beneteau 50, which was a really, really good boat, by the way, for a Beneteau especially. The old 1990s Beneteau 50s, really good boats. Probably the best boat Beneteau ever built. But Simon is in Scotland. Like, he's English, right? So he's over in Scotland at some point a couple years ago. He sees his boat offshore. He's like driving his, he got one of those Land Rover like series ones from the 1960s, has a top speed of 55 mile an hour, and he thinks he's like so cool in his old Land Rover with like the windshield wipers don't work and the headlights don't work and there's no heat or air conditioning, and you go 55 top speed, and you got this box, this freaking vehicle looks like a box with wheels on it, and he just thinks it's the coolest thing. So he sees this boat, you know, sailing by, and he's like, that's Brumby. Now, I don't know how the hell he could know that, but he's driving down the road in Scotland, looks out to sea, and sees his old boat. He sailed this boat single-handed across the Atlantic in the 1990s, and he sold it in Spain because he got a divorce. And, you know, he sold the boat and the wife got half the money, you know, that sort of situation. So anyways, he follows this boat for like 2 days or something. He finds it anchored somewhere, but he can't get to it. And he's like chasing this boat up the coast of Scotland with his car. A couple of years later, he finds it for sale with a different name. He's like, hey, were you, you know, in Scotland at this place at this time? And the guy was like, yeah, how did you know? He's like, yeah, I was following you. And I mean, it takes a real sailor to be able to spot a boat out like a mile and a half out to sea. You know, it looks like a little speck out there and you're like, oh my God, that's my old boat. Like, how do you even know that stuff? So, but that's Simon for you, man. He knows every single boat. He messes with me all the time. He's like, Hey Matt, what's that boat? You know, like we're delivering something or we're in some marine. It's like, I don't know what that boat is, man. It's a boat. And he'll be like, he'll like break down the whole history. I mean, I know a lot of boats. Don't get me wrong. I know a whole lot of boats. But I don't know every single boat ever built, you know, I mean, and he does. So anyways, he ends up buying back his old boat for like half the price that the guy was asking. Because Simon got no money. He delivers boats like crazy. Delivery captains, although the daily rate might seem like a lot when you're paying for it, it really doesn't add up that much over a 12-month period of time. He's always half broke. Anyways, this story goes on, so we got to cut to a commercial break and I'll continue.
Bonnie Lass Charters is Mallorca's number one experience.
Bonnie Lass is a 57-foot converted fishing boat. She was built in 1949 as a herring ring netter in Scotland, and now she's set up for the Mediterranean. Apart from just relaxing in the sunshine on the deck, there's paddleboarding and any kind of exploring you can imagine up along the north coast of Mallorca here, quite often with Maggie the dog in tow as well. Bonnie Lass Charters is unique because no charter is really the same. We work really hard to make it the perfect day for each individual client. To be able to go out and enjoy the day with the guests on board is just fantastic.
For more information and to make a booking, visit bonnielasscharters.com.
I'm John Herlig. In Postcards from Sea, I tell stories of my travels aboard Ave Del Mar, my 1967 Rawson cutter. I deal with serious nautical issues like how to sail your mast into a tree on a canal, what kind of incense best covers the aroma of kimchi fermenting on your boat, or whether or not I can beat a leukemia patient at a video game. It's simply the story of my life. And my life happens to take place on a 50-year-old sailboat with no particular destination in mind. I hope you'll join me and some of the wonderful characters I meet as I travel for my show, Postcards from Sea, every other Monday here on Boat Radio.
Time goes forward, go and catch your jet, you will find your moment. Time goes forward.
Hello and welcome back to Ocean Research Project. I am Matt Rutherford, sitting in Warren, Ohio, the great, well-known, metropolitan, booming, freaking place of Warren, Ohio. So anyways, Simon's the man. I guess that's basically what I was trying to get around to. And like I say, I got more stories for you later. So I'm on this outbound 46 delivery, okay? It was this last-minute delivery. Trying to get my boat in the water. I got all of a sudden, it's like, oh, I got to run to Florida. Drop everything and run to Florida and jump on this boat and sail it up. And you got to get it north of this border of Florida and Georgia before the first, or like the whole world is going to explode. And so I did it. And I needed the money. I mean, that's the truth. I got in a car accident recently. I mean, I didn't get hurt. Nobody got hurt. You know, it was fine. But still, I needed to get a new car. I got the stupidest car ever. I mean, like just the stupidest. I got a really good deal on a Range Rover, on like a 2005 Range Rover with like giant rims on it, like big old dope dealer rims, which I honestly think look good because I grew up on the streets, you know, but I mean, I look like I should be hustling something on the corner or something like that. But Range Rovers are way too complicated for their own good. Like it's been raining. I've been driving in the rain the last few days, like long, like 6 hours in the highway and like downpouring rain. And these, you turn the windshield wipers on and they got like a sensor in it. So, and they automatically determine how fast the windshield wiper should be moving, determined on this sensor. And it's like way too much technology for me. Like way too much. And all I'm thinking is, God, this is going to be expensive to fix when it breaks. The whole car is like that. You turn the ignition on and the freaking steering wheel like shoots out of the dashboard. It's like, whoa. I mean, the thing looks beautiful. And I got it because, you know, I'm taking people around sometimes to look at like $500,000 boats. And like, I can't like shuttle wealthy people around in like an old hoopty. And that's what I had. I had like an old hoopty work vehicle with like scratches all over it on inside and out. So I needed to get something that makes me look like I got more money than I have, I guess. I don't know. So it's a stupid vehicle. So I don't even know where I was going with that. So I'm going to get back to the story here. So anyway, Simon, man, I got this email. I'm just getting back into the bay. Somebody else in the marina is like, yeah, man, you heard this beep coming from your boat. And I'm like, oh, crap. So anyway, Simon's in town, luckily, because he's gone a lot. And I'm like, hey, Simon, man, can you swing by my boat and check it out? Someone's like, hey, man, this thing is beeping. And you know, I'm thinking it's probably nothing. You know, I'm like, hey, man, you know, it's probably nothing, man. But can you, you know, do me a favor? And so he's like, yeah, yeah, sure. I'll call you back in a minute. So whatever. I'm on watch, chugging up the bay, and I get this call back. And it's from Simon. He's like, there's a shit ton of water in your boat. I'm like, what? You know, to say the least, right? And he's like, yeah, man, there's like stuff, you know, water above your floorboards, and there's like stuff floating around in here. And I was like, oh my God, my boat's sinking in the slip. Oh my God. You know, I'm just, you know, I'm trying not to panic. I'm really not saying that, to be honest. I'm like, I'm being cool like a cucumber, just okay. All right, you know, the bilge pump, you know, it was like, all right, turn the bilge pump on. Bilge pump wasn't working. It was already on. It just wasn't working. Explains part of the explanation for the water. And it gets kind of embarrassing from there. Simon, like, you know, it's like, we're talking like 9:30 at night right now, maybe 10 o'clock at night. And I don't know what happened because I wasn't there, but Simon, and I'm on the bay, I'm like 19 hours from getting back to the marina. I'm heading to the marina where my boat's at, but I got at least 19 hours getting up the bay. It's 120 miles, so I got at least 19 hours to get up there. And so anyways, I get this call back from him, and he's like, man, this is like a circus here. I'm like, what do you mean it's like a circus? He's like, well, I found some pumps, I guess word... There's 32 liveaboards at Port Annapolis Marina. 32. That's like an insane amount of liveaboards. All right. That's huge. And apparently every single one of them, it was like somebody put the Batman symbol in the air. You know, it's like, what did you do, Simon? Would you launch the Batman symbol? Like, will you alert the whole marina? Like, what's going on? Because the whole marina is now standing around my boat. There's like two or three people working with a pump, including Simon, to pump out the boat, and everybody else is like gawking, basically, you know, like rubbernecking or something. And it was like some big ordeal. And I'm like, Jesus, criminy. Like, on one hand, you want to be polite, you know, because these people care and they're being nice and they're trying to be nice and trying to help you get the water out of your boat. And, you know, so you want to be nice about that. And on the other hand, you know damn well that only like three of them are actually doing work while all the rest of them are just standing around watching. You know, it's like watching a crash in NASCAR. You know, it's like watching a YouTube video of something crashing. You know, people are standing there watching to see if my boat sinks. You know, it's like that sort of thing. It's, you know, it's like, geez, I'm gonna tell people to it's over. You know, like when the police, okay, folks, it's over now. Go home. You know, like I needed one of those cops to like stand there and tell everybody the show's over and go home. And it's also, well, me, I just, a whole piece of wood just fell off the chair I'm sitting on. I don't know if you heard that, but that's this chair falling apart underneath of me. That's my friend Brian's house. Smells like a freaking cigarette butt. The chairs are falling apart. He was nice enough to leave me some nice whiskey, actually, and some moonshine. He's like, oh, I got some Ohio moonshine, and I'll leave it out for you. God, I had a little bit of it. It burned me. I'm going to have dreams of it burning me. It's still burning. Anyways, I'm getting totally sidetracked. My boat is sinking. I'm going up the bay. It's the last call you want to have. I'm trying to be cool, man. I'm trying to get sleep. I've been on the ocean for like, you know, almost 4 days, and it was hot. It was a hot delivery. You know, it was just hot, and it's hard to sleep when you're sweating profusely in your while laying down off watch. You know, I was tired, and now instead of getting a little bit of rest when I'm off watch, motoring up the Chesapeake Bay, I'm sitting there thinking about my boat's about to sink. Worse yet, you know, I just spent like 3 weeks or 2.5 weeks with my boat on the hard, and all this time I spent trying to get this boat in better condition. And it's like everything I just did. No, that's not true. You know, I mean, that's me over-exaggerating it, you know. And it's easy to over-exaggerate it. Obviously, the paint job outside. I spent a lot of time painting the outside because I had a lot of rust. All those icebergs and stuff that I hit, you know. Unlike the Titanic, I can hit an iceberg. I'm just joking. I hit a lot of ice because I was going through areas where there was no water that wasn't frozen. You gotta, and it wasn't like solid ice. It was big chunks. Like I said, well, look at the Greenland 2016 Greenland Climate Project Phase 4. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it on my website. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about as far as pushing through ice goes. And all that did it. You know, it wreaked havoc on my paint job. I knew it would. I got a steel boat. What do I care? I get some paint. I'll paint it. You know, I don't need all grip. I don't need a spray. I paint my boat with bilge paint. How's that? My gray, the gray part of my hull that you saw in those videos or that it is now, I use Pettit bilge paint. You know why? I talked to the Pettit rep a few years back. I'm like, hey, why is your bilge paint cheaper than your other paint? It's like $30, $40 a gallon cheaper. Like, why is that? He's like, well, you know, people don't buy that much bilge paint, and so they make it cheap. And I was like, well, what's the actual difference? He goes, well, you know, they put some things in there for like oil and stuff, but basically it's the same exact thing as like their topside paint. So I'm like, you're telling me I can get a gallon of your paint for like $40 cheaper, and it's basically the same thing? It just says bilge on it? And he's like, yeah, pretty much. So anyway, I've been painting my boat with bilge paint ever since, because why spend $40 more? Hell, I got oil resistance. I probably don't have UV. I would not suggest anybody else does this, by the way. I wouldn't suggest you go paint your boat with bilge paint. It works well for me. I got a work boat. I got a steel work boat. Like, what do I care? You know, it works well for me. Anyways, so time is ticking, man. You know, I get a call from Simon at like 10:30, maybe later. I get a call from him at like 11:30. And Simon is like, we got most of the water out of the bilge and the people have basically gone home. Hold on with that. Ah, I had to take a sip of something. I got some heartburn. Anyway, see, look at this. Just talking about this gives me heartburn. Anyways, it was like, okay, man, we got most of the water out, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, all right, man, I'll be there at 4 in the morning. I'll be there at 4 in the morning. And I was. Okay, so I get there, I tie the boat off. I walk right over to my boat. It's like a freaking catastrophe. There's like 18,000 extension cords run, all sorts of pumps, little pumps, look like something you put in a fish tank, big pumps, medium pumps. It's just like, and I had about 9 inches above my floorboards of water. I got this smell going on. It's just like trash. Now, luckily, my pilot house and my aft cabin are like higher up. Neither of those were affected by it. My engine was already broken anyways. What the hell do I care? You can go over and kick my engine. If you could kick my engine in the balls, I'd let you do it, if that was such a thing. Because what do I care? The thing is broken anyways, you know? But anyways, it didn't get water in it. And Or what? Who cares, right? Broken hunk of metal at this point. And, you know, whatever. I mean, luckily for me, I had taken most of the stuff out of the boat before the haul out. I filled an entire storage unit full of stuff. I got in this whole kick. It's like, I just want to get the stuff off the boat, you know, because it was a lot of it was expedition related stuff. So I'm pulling all the stuff out, putting in the storage unit. And so almost everything was out of the boat that would have been down low. I mean, my shoes got ruined. My rugs got ruined. The compressor for my refrigerator got ruined. My floorboards are a little less happy than they used to be. And nothing big happened. I mean, it really wasn't damaging overall. The only real loss is that compressor to the, which God knows how old the compressor, it's probably 15, 20-year-old refrigerator compressor anyways. And Simon got one in a storage unit. Now I'm going to buy off of him for like 100, 200 bucks. I'll make a deal with him. I'll buy his old used compressor. I don't even know where Simon got it from. But I'll buy it off him and I'll slap it in my boat. And boom, it'll be over. But it all does, you know, you spend all this time, you spend like 2.5 weeks working on your boat. And the whole purpose of that was just to make it nice again, you know, just to make it livable. I'm turning that boat into a condo, you know, because I got another situation going on. I'll try to explain it if I got any time here in a minute. So, you know, I'm just, and you come back from a delivery, you've been in the ocean, you've been, you know, you're working hard out there, five on, five off with one other guy, beating into it. We had nothing but headwinds. Beating into, and granted, the Outbound 46 was a lovely boat for beating into. I mean, it really, those boats are, I'm very impressed by how well that boat sailed. But, I mean, for $750,000, I mean, what do you expect, right? You expect a boat that's going to do that. But nevertheless, it performed very well. And you know, you get home, and the boat's my home, you know, and you want to kick back and you don't want to come back to a freaking disaster. Pumps laying everywhere. You got like a film all over the place. All sorts of, you know, the nasty. I wanted to clean out the bilge. So you probably wonder, well, what happened, right? So I should get in there. So it was a cluster of, it was like the perfect storm of things that happened. I had something called a thermal selenograph. Excuse me. Heartburn is finally coming out of me. Made me burp. Anyways, I had this thing, this thermal selenograph. And a thermal selenograph is about a $9,000 piece of equipment. And what it does is it's used for ground truthing salinity satellites used by NASA. So in outer space, you have satellites that can read the salinity. The ice and the icebergs in the Arctic throw off the satellite's ability to properly read the salinity levels in the Arctic. Why does that matter? Why do we want to know? Because the more ice that melts off the Greenland ice cap, the more fresh water is going to get mixed in with the salt water. So we need these satellites to be able to determine the amount of salt water versus fresh water in the Arctic regions. And also anywhere else in the world. They cover the whole planet. They're salinity satellites. They look at salinity. Anyways, still got heartburn. So we had this piece of equipment. We used it for a couple of years. It's called ground truthing. That's what the scientific term is. You're ground truthing for NASA's salinity satellites. Well, the damn fitting, this T-fitting, failed. And my bilge pump failed. All while I was gone. And so it was this storm. It's like, you know, a leak started and a pump failed simultaneously. And I wasn't around to catch it in time because I was in a hurry to get to Florida because I had to get north of this border before this freaking insurance issue. And I now have a giant mess on my hands. I did a lot of cleaning up before I left, but I don't even have time. I got like 20 seconds left for this thing, before I get into telling other stories. So anyways, I'm not even going to tell you why I drove all the way to Maine and then all the way to Ohio. How's that? Take that, listeners. Anyways, guys, I got to cut the commercial. Okay, yep.
All Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world, working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organisations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they're also the most resourceful, responsive and resilient children that we could have the honour of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org. Bonnie Last Charters is Mallorca's number one experience.
Bonnie Last is a 57-foot converted fishing boat. She was built in 1949 as a herring ring netter in Scotland, and now she's set up for the Mediterranean. Apart from just relaxing in the sunshine on the deck, there's paddleboarding and any kind of exploring you can imagine up along the north coast of Mallorca here, quite often with Maggie the dog in tow as well. Bonnie Last Charters is unique because no charter is really the same. We work really hard to make it the perfect day for each individual client. To be able to go out and enjoy the day with the guests on board is just fantastic.
For more information and to make a booking, visit bonnielastcharters.com.
Hello and welcome back to Ocean Research Project. I'm Matt Rutherford. Here I am. Warren, Ohio. Good old Warren, Ohio. Good old Ohio. Anyways, yeah, okay, so my boat got trashed after I put a whole bunch of time and a whole bunch of work into it to try to make it more livable, and I run off on a delivery last minute because they're freaking out about the insurance, so I can't be there when the boat goes in the water. You want to know the real son of a bitch of this whole situation? I could have left the next day. That's what really gets me. I ran off to go to this boat because it had to be done right now. And I showed up in Florida, and that broker who let his dog run all over this boat and put hair everywhere, make the cushion stink like a dog with freaking black, nasty floors, he didn't ever have a diver come down and clean the bottom, ever. It was like a tropical rainforest growing upside down on the hull. And I couldn't leave the slip. I show up. I'm ready to leave, man. I got my groceries. I got water. I got everything. And the boat is like a freaking jungle underwater. And that really pissed me off at the time. That pissed me off more than everything. It's like I woke up at 3:30 in the morning to catch a 6 o'clock flight to get there. And I show up with my crew, with our backpacks on and our groceries ready to go, and it's like a jungle underwater. I can't even leave the slip because I don't even want to use the words that I would like to use to describe this individual. But anyways, so the harshest aspect of this whole thing is I could have been there when the boat went in the water. And I would have seen that thermal selenograph T-fitting fail. And I would have seen that my bilge pump failed. And I could have stopped all that from happening. Because I didn't leave for 24 hours. I was stuck there for 24 hours waiting for some stupid diver. And it wasn't the diver that was stupid, don't get me wrong. It ain't nothing with the diver. It was the broker who should have had the diver down there months ago, weeks ago. What are you doing selling a $400,000 listing with dog hair everywhere and a bunch of freaking forest growing off the bottom, or a tropical rainforest on your keel? So this whole thing was preventable. That broker. I try not to get angry. Anyways, yeah, okay, so you guys are like, hey, Matt, you're supposed to do science in, like, the second part, and all you did is complain about your boat getting, like, half submerged in water and almost sinking in the slip. Yeah, that's right. That's what I did. All right. I am going to talk about plastic trash in the ocean for the next few episodes, and I did want to today, but I want to bring somebody on the show. No, I never bring anybody on the show. It's always me. You guys are always stuck here listening to me the whole time. And I'm trying to bring my friend Marcus, Dr. Marcus Erickson, who spent his entire, well, half of his life researching this issue. And, you know, I want to bring an expert in before we start talking about what we can do about it. You know, I mean, that's where we're going. We're going that way. What can be done? What can be done to help prevent plastic trash in the ocean? How can we do something to make a difference? Well, it's going to take a few episodes. And I'm in Warren, Ohio. And I'm like on a dark side of the moon right now, basically. You know, I'm surrounded by rust and unemployed, angry people. So let me get back to talking about where I was. Okay, so I was in Spain. I was going to do a transatlantic. I was in SADA. I wanted to teach English there, even though I can barely speak it myself. And then I left to do a transatlantic, which I didn't do. I got hit by a storm off of Finisterre, which had nothing to do with why I didn't do it. I didn't have anything to do with it. Because the water pump on my engine, my Johnson water pump, started leaking, man. It was like hemorrhaging water. So I pull into this place in Spain by the Spanish-French border called Bayona. I don't know. I'm slaughtering the name. But whatever it is, it was freaking beautiful. And I pull in and I drop an anchor, and there's a sunset that evening. Like a sunset like you ain't never seen before. And I've seen some sunsets, man. I'm talking about... Ah, stop calling me, people! Jeez! This is again! I'm not gonna stop. Alright. Just peep... I need my phone so I can know how long I've been talking. Anyway, I'm sorry for the interruption. So anyways, I'm in Bayona, man. I'm looking at incredible sunset. The whole sky is like reds and yellows and oranges. And I'm sitting in my cockpit. I'm looking at this. Jesus, just floored by it, you know. And all right, you know, let's continue on. Let's continue on south. Like, I'm not going to get a job teaching English in freaking La Coruña or in Sada. It's not going to happen. Get off your pipe dream and just keep doing what you were going to do, which is sail to Africa, you know. But first, you got to go to Portugal. Cool. All right. So I backtrack here. I backtrack from Bayona, whatever it is called. It's over there. It's pretty. It's by the border. I go up north a little bit, just a wee bit. The Isles Unos, Isles something or other. Basically, there's all these little islands off the Atlantic coast of Spain, not too far north of the Portuguese border. Maybe like 100 miles north. I mean, that's a little ways, but it's not that far. Maybe it's less than. Maybe it's 50 miles. I don't know what it is. You look out on a map. You can see it pretty easy. And beautiful. Absolutely gorgeous. I mean, the water looks like the Caribbean. Looks like the Bahamas. The hell with the Caribbean. The Bahamas is so much better water. And you might be like, yeah, Matt, well, Bahamas is part of the Caribbean. Is it? Is it? It's off of Florida. Is the Bahamas part of the Caribbean? I don't know to this day. I really don't know. I don't consider it part of the Caribbean. Do you consider the Bahamas part of the Caribbean? I don't do a question and answer, so I shouldn't probably start asking questions. Anyways, beautiful place. But the water is cold, man. The Spanish are some of the most naked people I ever met. They talk about, like, you think about like French beaches, like nude beaches or something. They're like nude in Spain. They're nude like on the seawall. And I'm not even joking. Like, that's not even the beach. Like, there's people standing on the seawall, like, in the town, butt naked. Like, butt naked. I'm not complaining because one of them's a girl, and she's probably young and beautiful. And Spanish girls are just beautiful. So, I mean, I wasn't complaining. And every beach you go to, even, like, the normal beaches are, like, somewhat, I mean, you can just let it all hang out, you know, whatever. And Yeah, I'm not complaining. But anyways, you go to this place. But it's cold. The water is cold. It's cold for that. It looks beautiful. It looks clear. So anyways, I jump up there. I go to a couple of these little islands off the coast of Spain. Very close. When I say off the coast of Spain, I'm talking like 1 or 2 miles. You know, I'm very, still, they're not way off the coast. They're close. Beautiful places. Beautiful, nice little hikes to the top. They're mountainous, you know, mountainous islands. Beautiful hikes. Beautiful naked girls on the beach of Spanish naked girls who don't understand any English. I can't put any game on. I can't say anything to them. I'm hopeless. All I can do is just walk on by and pretend like I'm not looking when I am. You know, I don't mean, I'm sorry if this podcast is not as child friendly as a lot of the other ones are, but you know, it is what it is. Anyway, so I end up going down to Portugal. And Portugal is quite a bit different in the north than it is in the south, in my experience. And also, the wine in Spain is much better than the wine in Portugal. And I ain't trying to hurt it. I don't mind a Porto wine. They make that. There's some aged port wines that are really good. But generally speaking, the wine is better in Spain. You get down in Portugal, the northern ports, the people are great. People are great. But once you get down to the Algarve, the southern Portugal, that's like the tourist spot. That's where it's crowded anchorages. You know, it's different. So anyways, I jump into a couple of ports, walk around. I'm a lonely guy at this point. I was so lonely, I was going to sail all the way across the Atlantic just before this, before my Johnson water pump failed. And I saw a beautiful sunset and decided to stay. And I get down, and, you know, some stuff happened. I was in this really gnarly port. A storm came in. Horrible storm. I helped some guy. His boat was dragging anchor. He was going to lose his boat. It was going to get destroyed up against a break wall, and I helped him. I rowed over to his boat in, like, 8-foot swells in a harbor with, like, breaking waves everywhere. And this stupid Avon Red Crest dinghy. Stupid dinghy. It looked like a pool toy. I rolled up to him and I helped him get his boat back. And whatever. I don't know his name. I don't know his boat. Nice guy. Whatever. That's what you do. That's what we do. We help each other out, right? That's what we do. You're in some random port. You're dragging anchor. You want someone to come and help you. I see somebody dragging anchor. I'm not dragging anchor. I'm in the same shit that he's in. But I'm not dragging it. So I roll myself over and I help him out. And anyway, so I go down to another port, kind of by, Portimao. I went Portimao. I don't even remember what it was called. It was a big port leading somewhere inland to a big city. Now, how is that for a horrible description? But the funny thing is that I meet this Brazilian girl. I wouldn't even know what to say to this girl. I mean, she's wearing like one of these little thong bikinis with a body like Victoria's Secrets. I you know, what do you even start? How do you even start the conversation? I don't know. Luckily for me, this dude who was like 50-some years old, who spoke very good English, and who was also Brazilian, was you know, I strike up this conversation with this dude. He also has a sailboat. What do you know? I got a sailboat. Where are you anchored? Oh, hey, you're anchored near where I'm anchored. We're anchored right by each other. Now we're all of a sudden like neighbors. Hey, what's up, neighbor? Let's have a drink. Okay, let's have a drink. Here's my girlfriend. That's, you know, his girlfriend was like 50-something. He was like in his 50s. Hey, here's my girl. Here's my girlfriend's cousin. Blah. That's that girl. And wearing like this little ridiculous Brazilian bikini. And of course, whatever. So it's like, hey, let's go out tonight. Now I'm like, okay. This girl doesn't speak any English. I don't speak any Portuguese. So we go out to this, you know, in Portugal, they speak Portuguese in Brazil. And there's this link between Portugal and Brazil, just to let you guys know. And so we go out to this Brazilian, like, dance club. And it's like, I can't dance to save my life. Like, I'm like this pasty, freckled, redhead dude and who gets sunburned in the shade. You know, and I'm going to like some Brazilian club. They're literally spinning girls above their heads. I mean, literally picking them up and spinning them, like doing like acrobatical dancing. Like, I can't even do like a slow. I can't do a waltz. I can't do the 1-2. You know, I can't dance to save my life. And these people are like spinning girls above their heads. So anyways, I'm trying to talk to this Brazilian girl who doesn't speak any English. Although I got this dude who's like 50 years old as my interpreter. And they're like, hey, let's hit the dance floor. And I'm like, oh no. So, okay, I hit the dance floor. Well, what else am I going to do? I got to hit the dance floor, right? And I suck at it. I wasn't even drunk. If I was drunk enough, at least I would feel better about it. I was sober as Mother Teresa, you know, and I'm hitting the dance floor and I'm bumping into people. I'm like stepping on her foot. Like, oh my God, it was embarrassing. Like, it was so embarrassing. Luckily for me, she thought it was like cute or something, you know, that was like the translation I got. She thought it was cute because she was just so used to like Rico Suave dudes who could dance so well. I guess she's not used to dudes who like step on everybody's feet and bounce off everybody. I was like a ping pong ball, you know, like freaking bouncing off everybody in the dance floor, pissing everybody off. They're all like giving me looks, you know, turning their head, giving me looks like, ah. Anyways, luckily she thought it was cute. I spent the next 3 days with her. It was a wonderful time. That was the only experience I had on that whole trip. They say there's a woman in every port. Yeah, right. Ain't no woman in every port. That's a horrible lie. Ain't no woman in no port, man. You're going to show up, you're going to sail single-handed around the world, and you're going to be one lonely son of a bitch. That's the truth. You're going to go to all these different ports, you go to all these places, and you're going to be alone. You're not going to speak the language. You're not going to have any money to go out, because I didn't have any money. I didn't speak the language. You're not going to have any friends in the town. You're not going to know anything. And then you think you're going to find a girl? What kind of ridiculous thought process is that? So this is the one time where that actually... I tripped over on the beach initially. That's how it was. I was walking down a crowded beach, and I tripped over this beautiful girl and almost fell on this dude who happened to have a sailboat and speak English. So anyways, it actually worked out really well in the end. You know, she thought it was cute that I was like the clumsiest dude to ever be on the dance floor. And we had another few days together. It was marvelous. Wonderful. She wanted me to stay. And my visa was going to run out soon. I had to get to Africa because my EU visa, you know, I had an EU visa. It was going to run out soon. So I had to go. She wasn't trying to come with me. I wouldn't have argued. If she was like, hey, I'm going to come with you to Africa and sail, whatever, I wouldn't have argued. I'd been like, hey, welcome aboard, you know. But at the same time, she wasn't trying to come with me to sail away. And I couldn't keep hanging out in Portugal forever, you know. So anyways, I'm running out of time. Check out Ocean Research Project on the website, oceanresearchproject.org. You need help buying a boat, let me know. I'll do my best to help you, man. And anyways, we run out of time. I'll talk to you next week. I'll give you more details about more pertinent information. All right.
do.
Should I keep my good?